It's the confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. More than 20,000 National Guard troops are in Washington to make sure tomorrow's inauguration is secure to thwart a repeat of January 6th, when right-wing extremists stormed the U.S. Capitol, disrupting the certification of election results. Five people died in the attack. Soon after, social justice advocates, politicians, and reporters noted a difference in how this pro-Trump mob was handled versus Black Lives Matter protests from last summer in front of the White House. Just last year, Pittsburgh saw a mix of protests, some calling for racial justice and others protesting the election results. With us is Jasiri X, an activist, and he's the founder and CEO of One Hood Media. Welcome back to The Confluence, Jasiri.
Thank you for having me.
Jasiri, what were you thinking when you saw what happened in Washington, D.C., January 6th?
Well, you know, a variety of thoughts. If there's one thing that, like, Black people understand is that historically, when white people feel, you know, disenfranchised, you know, oppressed in whatever way they see, the response is almost always violent. When I saw the pictures of the Trump rioters fighting police officers, beating police officers, there's one video with the American flag, climbing up walls. I mean, it was kind of like white people gone wild, in a sense, you know what I'm saying? So it was a thing of like, are you seeing this? It was really like white privilege on display in terms of how weak the response by police was. The fact that you saw videos of police officers waving folks in, taking selfies with protesters, opening barriers. It was shocking in the sense of like, you know, what we've been saying about how the difference in the way we've been treated by police was on full display.
Mm-hmm. Well, President-elect Joe Biden said after the attack, if the rioters had been a group of Black Lives Matter protesters, they would have been treated very differently than the mob of thugs that stormed the Capitol, end quote. Do you think it was different treatment, or were authorities literally overwhelmed by the numbers of those who breached the Capitol?
Well, I think that's the beginning of the different treatment. You know, we go out there with signs and water and, you know what I'm saying? Like, we're not in paramilitary gear. We don't have pipe bombs or Molotov cocktails. And the police come out in full SWAT regalia in Pittsburgh. I remember, you know, we saw like mini tanks. Police had like tanks and tear gas and all of these things for basically a group of Black teenagers leading us on a protest against police brutality. So, I mean, we've seen the photos of when it was Black Lives Matter protests. You saw the National Guard and military out there, you know, and the fact that there was not National Guard, there was not officers in full SWAT gear. To me, this shows that, like, it had to be some type of coordination.
So you're saying coordination rather than just not being prepared and not being prepared for the size and the violence of the crowd?
Kevin, let's these people planned this for months, man. Like, this wasn't a surprise. If the chief of the Capitol Police is saying, I reached out to the Pentagon and they denied my request for more assistance, that's the level of coordination that I want to know. When we see video of Capitol Police officers waving protests in, now reports are coming out that Black officers in the Capitol Police have been saying for years that there were officers that had racist tendencies on that force.
Jasiri, during the House hearings on impeachment, some members talked about the insurrection, and then they mentioned the protests this past summer. Do you think it's fair to make a comparison between protests against racial injustice, a reality, where there were some incidents of violence, and a violent protest, an insurrection with no basis of reality, a so-called stolen election?
I wouldn't have a problem with you if you were consistent. You can't see Black people rightfully being angry because of consistent, you know, Black folks being killed by police on camera going out protesting. And like you said, where they're looting and where their stuff, absolutely. And say, you know, as Trump said, when the looting starts, the shooting starts. But then have a group of white people loot the Capitol and make excuses.
Are you an optimist that anything good can happen? Maybe eyes opened.
I'm going to be honest. And you know what's wild, Kevin, is normally I am an optimist. But in this instance, the fact that, like, Trump's still president and these senators and Congress people who were tweeting out 1776 and all of these different things that inflame this are still have their positions causes me to not be optimistic. As crazy as this might sound, it wasn't shocking enough. It 5 people died, including an officer. And that might not have been enough to wake people up to the reality of what's going on right now.
Activist Jaziri X is the founder and CEO of One Hood Media. Jaziri, thanks so much for your time.
And thank you, man.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. In addition to the offices of President, U.S. Senate, State Attorney General, Auditor General, and Treasurer, Pennsylvania voters elect members of the state Supreme, Superior, and Commonwealth Courts statewide. State Representative Russ Diamond of Lebanon County wants to change how appellate judges are elected in the state. Representative Diamond, welcome to The Confluence.
Well, good morning.
Your proposal is an amendment to the Pennsylvania Constitution. It was approved along party lines last year, and of course, if approved again in this new session, would go to the voters in a ballot question. Right now, there are 7, 9, and 15 judges in the Supreme, Commonwealth, and Superior Courts, respectively. Why do you think those appellate judges should be elected by districts?
We're looking to solve a problem. And there is a problem with our appellate courts right now in Pennsylvania in that although they are statewide elections for those offices, those elections are generally won and those seats are generally held overwhelmingly by two specific counties in Pennsylvania. That would be Allegheny and Philadelphia County. Now, everybody would say, well, they're the most populous county, so that makes sense. However, those two counties account for about 21.8% of our population. But over the course of the last 50 years, those two counties account for nearly 60% of the people who populate those courts. Meanwhile, we have 44 counties across Pennsylvania who have never had anyone ever sit on our appellate courts, which are very, very important.
A couple of points, if I may. For instance, 7 on the Supreme Court right now, 3 are from Allegheny County, 1 from southeastern Pennsylvania, the Philly area, 1 from Butler County, Tioga County, Harrisburg. I mean, that's pretty much across the state, plus the other appellate courts. I mean, we have them from Pittsburgh, Philly, New Hope, Beaver, Harrisburg, Media, Bethlehem, etc. Doesn't that show voters are choosing judges from all over?
Voters do choose judges from all over when they can. However, when you think about if you're a political party and you're thinking about running someone in a statewide race, you give a lot of credence to the fact that they are from Philadelphia or Allegheny County when you attempt to endorse them for office. And you weigh that factor. Well, there's a lot of people from Philly because we put those county labels on the ballot in the primary election. And so the parties are inclined to only pick, mostly pick candidates from those two counties. But the end result is that well over half of all those seats are being dominated by counties with only 21% of the population. And if we look back to just the initial founding of the Commonwealth Court, well, that was done at the 1968 Constitutional Convention, and Governor Schaefer went to great lengths to make sure that those seats were evenly distributed across regions in Pennsylvania. But since that time, that geographical diversity has been lost through the election process.
Now, you indicated that the courts should be reflective, like representative legislature, representing the people's views or from different parts of the state. But aren't they all the judges? Aren't they just supposed to be interpreting and administering the law that affects all Pennsylvanians, not a particular region?
One would believe that that would happen. However, let's just take one of the most one of the issues that most people disagree with the most, and we're talking about firearms rights. Someone from Philadelphia or Allegheny County has a very different philosophical viewpoint of our firearms rights and what the Constitution means regarding our firearms rights than someone else from who may be from Pike County or some other rural area of the state. And if we get a firearms rights case that goes to the Supreme Court and it's dominated 4-3 by members of two counties than the people in the rest of the Commonwealth, what I'm suggesting to you is that the same kind of discussion and compromise and consensus that comes when it comes to making laws in Harrisburg should also appear when we are reviewing those laws on appeal and when we're setting precedent for the future.
But are you saying that judges are now representing the philosophies of where they're from rather than upholding our current laws and our state constitution? Using your firearms example, let's face it, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh have approved firearms control legislation, if you would. I'll use the word control. And they have not been upheld by our appellate courts.
I am not saying that the laws differ, but there are always gray areas in law, and that's why we end up going to appellate courts in Pennsylvania. When you're looking at those gray areas, someone's judicial philosophy and the philosophy they've matured in and have practiced in, that really comes through when you're talking about the gray areas of law. And that's what our appellate courts are directly for. It's not the black and white letter of the law, but the gray areas of the law when people have disagreements about what that law means. So I believe that the regional diversity of Pennsylvania, every citizen of this Commonwealth has a right to have someone on that court who shares their philosophy, the judicial philosophy about what the law should mean.
State Representative Russ Diamond from Lebanon County, thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Joining us now to continue the conversation on how Pennsylvanians should elect judges and justices to our appeals courts is Deborah Gross, President and CEO of Pennsylvanians for Modern Courts, a nonpartisan nonprofit. Welcome to the Confluence.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Your organization opposes electing members to our appellate courts by district. Why?
Because it will take away the independence of these judges, of the judiciary. It will disenfranchise voters, and it is just a bad idea.
You say disenfranchise voters. They're still being elected, but voters would choose, I guess, fewer members of the appellate courts. Is that what you're saying?
So voters would choose only one member of the Supreme Court, whereas now they get to choose seven. They would choose one member of the Superior Court, where now they get to choose 15. And they would choose only one member of the Commonwealth Court, where now they get to choose 10.
Mm-hmm. Members of our legislature are elected by district, so why not our appellate judges?
Because judges aren't politicians. They aren't supposed to be politicians. They are supposed to uphold the Constitution and the laws of the state and of the country. They are not supposed to make their decisions based on the political whims. It's the judiciary is the third branch of government. It's an important check and balance.
So this potential amendment introduced by State Representative Russ Diamond would affect how Pennsylvanians choose Commonwealth, Superior, and Supreme Court justice. Give us an overview, if you would. What's the system for choosing judges now and how it might change?
So again, now Pennsylvanians can elect all these judges. When a position opens up or when a judge is up for retention, all Pennsylvanians are entitled to vote with respect to appellate court judges. How this will change is actually very unclear in terms of each citizen will only be able to elect one supreme, one superior, and one Commonwealth court judge. But how this will be transitioned is not set forth in this bill, and it's truly concerning, right? It talks about the General Assembly establishing the transition. Does this mean that we are going to clean the slate completely and start from scratch? Does this mean that judges who are entitled by law to be up for retention will no longer be? Does it mean that the legislature will decide to first handle the Supreme Court elections, then the Superior Court, and then the Commonwealth Court? It is a complete confusing bill.
Of course, you mentioned the retention. All the judges to all of our appellate courts are elected for 10-year terms, and then if they wish, they can stand for a retention election where it's just a thumbs up or thumbs down, and there is no opponent, correct?
Correct.
Debbie, do you think this bill is partisan?
Yes. How can it not be if the only people who support it are from one party?
And that being the Republican Party. So, Debbie, finally, if this proposed amendment gets on the ballot, as we said, it's been approved one time, it has to be approved in a second consecutive legislative session. If it gets on the ballot, will your organization campaign against it?
Oh, absolutely. But there's something that also needs to be brought to light here. The way this bill has been brought forth, it has had no testimony, no public hearings, no experts, has not taken into consideration or reached out to any of the area bar associations. It was rushed through like a train without brakes, you know, passing by a station. It came through the Senate in July, after July 4th weekend. There was, again, no hearing, no testimony, no experts. The members of the House who had actually supported the merit selection bill, some of them weren't even aware that this was being brought to the Senate and then out of the Senate in the 3-day time period. And again, it's being rushed now. It's going to be presented, we were told, at the end of January, beginning of February, that, you know, we have the election chaos, we have, we had the holidays, we have COVID. People are not aware of this bill, and the legislators are taking advantage of that lack of knowledge.
Deborah Gross is president and CEO of Pennsylvanians for Modern Courts. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Tom Hurley, Isabel Schmaler, Lara Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.